This week on Movie Movies, we are visiting Charlie Heston. This might be one of the oldest movies we've done in a while. We have Charlton Heston's Soylent Green, which we chose because, of course, it takes place in the far-off year of 2022. So enjoy a slightly different, more sci-fi approach. Anyway, I want to thank you for all you're doing. I also want to let you know of a few things coming down the pipe because we're trying to, you know, let you guys know the upcoming film. So, next week, we're talking Masters of the Universe, the He-Man canon movie. And then we start our October surprise, which is a month of werewolf movies. We're starting in September because we're going to do a surprise interruption for the dropping of Black Adam. So enjoy. In the meantime, enjoy Soylent Green, and thanks for all the things you do to keep us in your mind, sharing, on replying to us on Twitter, and writing us reviews. Thank you. Bye, guys.
Welcome to Myopia Movies. This week, we're talking 1973's Soylent Green, done by Fleischer, I believe. In honor of the fact that it takes place in 2022. So, we will, I guess, compare and contrast it to 2022, as it turns out. I am your host, Nick Hoffman, and Riffer on Cineprom, and on panel we have...
I am Charlie Rose.
Hello, this is Daniel, contributor to PopDose.com, and I think Soylent Green's a little salty myself.
I'm author Matthew W. Quinn, who has not yet written a dystopian novel. I probably should.
Okay.
Yeah. Honestly, if I can just get us a little sidetracked here, I agree. I'm interested in what dystopian Matt comes up with.
Oh my gosh. I really want to read this now.
There's a blog post I wrote called The American Principate or the Right-Wing Dystopia that wasn't. It was the fall of the Roman Republic with George W. Bush as Julius Caesar and Dick Cheney as Augustus.
Okay, that's not what we're talking about here.
No.
We want to see what you come up with. As what is your dystopian world? Oh. Like, what is the political structure? What is the landscape? What does it all look like?
Well, it looks like Soylent Green.
I was 8 years old and I didn't have Nickelodeon. All right.
Are you saying I sound like Charlton Heston?
Well,
or Ronald Reagan?
Don the Luck. Don!
Never say Ronald Reagan on this show because two people, at least two, will try to do that voice.
There.
I was trying to do Charlton Heston. I don't know.
They sound a lot. When you guys do the impersonations, they both sound a lot alike.
Well, Matt.
I mean, Reagan kind of hisses
they're
more.
Terrible impersonation.
Why are you being a troll, Matt?
Yeah, why? I'm bringing it somewhere. 45 seconds into this.
Oh, you.
So, this movie starts out like Cheers, and we just see flashes of what the city is. And it's just like the city and its population.
Or 80s Dallas, where it's all those squares.
And it turns out that we're set in New York City, 2022.
Population 40 million.
Swing and a miss. We're off to a good start.
It's like the montage is like a... You see, it starts out with like all these bucolic farming, but then you start seeing more and more.
They're, you know, Norman Rockefeller. You know.
I mean, how'd you put Carnival?
Norman Rockwell.
Norman Rockefeller.
Well, that's dystopian in and of itself, but yes, Norman Rockwell.
Well, and, I mean, had you put Carnival of the Animals over it, it would have been the opening of Days of Heaven.
It would.
And then, you start seeing more and more pictures of cars and urban sprawl, and it accelerates. It's getting worse and worse. I actually liked that.
It was a fantastic a tool that they used. Definitely. I agree. Mm-hmm.
I was merely painting a palette for the people who have not seen this, because this movie turns out it's almost 50 years old. It'll be 50 years old next year.
So it needs a prostate exam. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Actually, at 50, you're supposed to be getting colonoscopies. Oh,
that too.
but speaking of colonoscopies, Edward G. Robinson is in this. And we need to talk about his performance as we go through it. But the man died 10 days after they filmed his final scene, which is in a suicide booth. And first problem I have with this movie, not problem, but note, which is, if suicide is an option, I think a lot more people would be killing themselves every day. Because this is, like, one of the worst dystopias we've ever seen.
Yeah, there are so many people. There are young people, too. So, I mean, everyone hates their lives.
Well, you did see a constant stream of people going in. Now, granted, it wasn't, like, you know, packed to the rafters. But there were people, like, you know, ready to, like,
maybe have say, to, maybe have
I'm
to
ready
have,
to check out.
Well, oh, this is a world where they have shortages of things, so they probably have to have reservations. So we've run out of poison for today.
Well, the strange thing about the suicide scenes was it was presented as a ceremony, and I just wasn't sure if they were referring to something in Judaism or if there was some suicide ceremony that existed in this future where there's no resources.
Well,
so,
we'll get there, but so, I like that it looks like Madison Square Gardens. Like, he walks in the front door, there's, like, a ticket booth. Like, it's really something.
Yeah.
Oh, it clearly was some sort of, like, arena.
Yeah.
They filmed it in an arena.
Suicide arena.
Suicide arena.
And Bender's somewhere trying to rip them off with a coin tied to his finger.
I will say, like, it's rewatching this, you realize how much Futurama took from this.
Oh, yeah.
A lot, which is funny. But
what's Slurm made of again?
Well, Slurm's made out of, like, an insect discharge.
Okay.
But, like, they do have human soda, I think, at one point, too, with someone's human rinds. Like, everyone's... This joke is...
Human rinds.
But, yeah, I mean, like, this is one of those movies that I don't know who's seen. I had seen it maybe 10 years ago the first time. But everyone knows the twist. This is... It's a kind of a weird movie where everyone talks about it, but no one has seen it.
Mm-hmm.
Matt's Toll House Pie is people. Matt's Toll House Pie is made out of people.
So where did everybody, like, first see a reference to this movie in that big twist? Because that's all anyone remembers.
Oh, my goodness. I'm going to say that really it was Phil Hartman.
Mm.
Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. There's a bit where they're sitting down with the producer of Silent Green, and it's like, every one of his movies is about people. Like, the food is people. And then you have Charlie going, and then they made a sequel. Soylent Green is still people. They said they changed the recipe, but they lied. They lied! They also, of course, do it in, at least at Futurama. I remember Rocko's Modern Life.
Yeah.
Speaking of childhoods, that show isn't as good as I remember. There's some episodes that are fine.
The movie on Netflix sucked. But
bad.
Yeah.
But Chokey Chicken is people.
Yeah.
Huh. Chokey Chicken is one of those jokes that you're just like, they got away with it, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's one of the more culturally relevant things we've done so far. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a dark future that I can definitely see happening.
Except it's supposed to be happening now.
Yeah, well, some of the
parts of it are.
Yeah, some of this stuff is really timely still, even if the population is actually starting to decline.
The global warming, you keep saying that, I don't think it's true.
It's just started to level off or decline very recently.
I was going to say, the global warming thing is right on. Like,
yeah, you could still, a lot of that could still
happen.
And
the lack of resources and whatnot. Yeah, I mean, it's there.
In the class division.
Oh, the class division, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Daniel, you want to give us a plot synopsis here?
Sure, I can try. So it takes place in the distant future, the year 2022. Charlton Heston is some sort of detective who is investigating the murder of a member of the board of directors of the Soylent Company that makes, like, what did he say, 65% of the world's population's food? Anyway, it's a big deal that he's gotten murdered, and in investigating that guy's murder, he comes across a big secret about the Soylent Company.
Which was willing to kill one of its own executives to cover it up.
Yep. Not just one of its executives, one of its directors.
Yeah,
one of the board of directors. Which is cool. Like, and so we're kind of... It's a movie that they don't really make anymore in some ways, because it's like a 70s potboiler, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's set in the sci-fi future, but, like, it's... This isn't directed as well as... But, you know, there are elements of All the President's Men or something in this, mm-hmm. where, you know, there's a lot of smoky garages doing research in libraries.
Would you
know.
Call them noir?
It's kind of noir.
You know, it's noir in the sense that Charlton Heston is playing very much a... hard-boiled detective.
Yeah.
The way it plays out is more of a suspense thriller than more than a noir movie.
And there's no, yeah, no leggy blonde walks into his place and
there
is calling anybody a dame.
They call her furniture.
Yes. We're going to get to that.
Cheryl is furniture. Or Cheryl.
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 Like hello, Shirley Levan. Without the EY.
Hello, Levan. Hello, Shoyle. Hello, Levan.
We need to talk about this. They short words for no reason. That cost me 100 D's.
Yeah, how can they not pronounce dollars in the future?
Or bucks. Bucks went away. I like the idea that we're going to futurize things by just calling them D's.
Well, you know, they go to the store and they give them the D.
Yeah.
And then in return, they get the food.
And sometimes there's just not enough
20 people. D's can buy many peanuts.
That's right.
Explain how. D's can be exchanged for goods and services.
Woo! I'm reminded of the Simpsons Halloween, you know. The Frogurt is also cursed.
That's bad.
It comes to your choice of toppings. Woo!
That's good.
But the toppings contain potassium benzoate. That's bad.
Can I go now?
No, you may not.
But yeah, so we can kind of describe this. We see Charlie Heston hanging out with his book. They call him the police book. Edward G. Robinson. You know, with his...
Hey, Charlton Heston, I can't find any food. See? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we're introduced to the hell of his own making. The that they have to, like, pedal a bike to power the light bulbs in the house.
Yeah, it's like, these are police officials who are living in what looks like someone's back room, you know, bookshop, and have to pedal a bicycle when the power starts to go.
It's sort of interesting. It implies that every detective is assigned a book. And I guess they live together and whatnot, like the book and the detective. Regardless, I found the relationship between Thorne and Saul to be a little interesting. It's very much heterosexual life partners, you know?
If you think about it, Silent Bob.
Well, here's the thing. When you think about it, you know, there's a lot of stories and articles coming out now about how because rent is so high, people are forming alternative family units.
Right.
And, you know, I can see in a future like this where, you know, alternative family units come together because, you know, they're expressing love for each other and it wasn't a joke. It was actually real.
No, and then they love each other. We'll get to the end. But
yeah.
Charlie's crying.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they told him that Edward Robinson was dying, like, right before they filmed the scene. He is really letting it go.
I mean, with the exception of Brian's song, I haven't seen a movie out of the 70s show male relationships this healthy, like, ever.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. And it's interesting because, you know, on one hand, Saul's... He's supposed to be maybe 25, 30 years older, or something like that.
Yeah.
Charlton Heston was born in this timeline in 1980, right? Because he's supposed to be 40-something in 2022.
Right.
And Saul, who's a little bit older, remembers the before time.
The long, long ago, as South Park would put it.
But I almost want him to be a skosh older, just because... They're kind of close in age for Charlton Heston not to remember anything.
Well, Charlton Heston just doesn't look... has always looked like that.
Come out of the womb looking like a tough 40-year-old.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I have nothing against Charlton Heston, but, like, either cast an older person than Edward G. Robinson or a younger person in Charlton Heston's role. Like a James Caan type. You know,
yeah.
31, 32, and then there's really that generational difference. But Charlton Heston does look like an old catcher's mitt in this, like, with all of his teeth, which you see in every shot of him.
Oh, yeah. He is showing those off.
I paid for these. he has to go to work. He's a cop. I have to go to work because 20 million other people want my job. And that's kind of the structure we have as he steps over all the people on the stairs.
Yeah, there's, like, millions of, like, homeless people lying in the streets and on the stairwells and... There's a Catholic church that's basically a homeless shelter. They use riot control bulldozers.
Which we'll get to.
Yes.
We're introduced to a scene which, I guess, kind of comes back around. There's a guy who looks like Muammar Gaddafi who hands a street thug I guess it's a crowbar as kind of a tool. to club in Joseph Cotton's head. And whenever we're outside, we see tens of thousands of people and a kind of green-yellow filter on the screen, like we've entered Steven Soderbergh's Mexico.
Oh, there are times this movie looks like a fart because there's this green gas that's, like, filtered just through everything.
At this point, we are introduced to the murder victim, I guess you'd call him, of the movie, a guy named William Simonson.
Yes.
Played by Joseph Cotton. And we're introduced to Cheryl, who is his furniture.
I thought her name was Cheryl.
I'm going to get it wrong every time.
Yeah, this movie shows a future where they don't seem to have any racism, but there is a whole lot of sexism.
And classism.
Yeah.
I mean, this is 2 years before the Equal Rights Amendment failed in the States.
I'm guessing because there are so many poor people and you get what you have to do to survive. These apartments people live in have concubines who come with the apartment who are referred to as furniture.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, because
that's some Epstein shit there.
There's so many people around that, I mean, certain people are just going to become commodities.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Otherwise, she's sleeping on the stairs.
I'm a teacher, man. You don't have to tell me people become commodities. I get it.
Well, I mean... Alrighty. Well, one of the things I found interesting is that it wasn't just Charlton Heston's character. I can't remember the name of it now.
Thorne.
That was referring to her as furniture. It was like the manager of the building, too.
Charlie.
Yeah.
Charlie is an asshole. I'm just not happy that Charlton Heston pistol whipped him.
Staring right at me.
Not you.
I mean, it's just, it's digging right to my heart.
Not you.
Charlie is such an asshole.
Yeah, I'm mad that Thorne didn't pistol whip him, you know, saying, oh, you're harassing my witnesses for my criminal case. I'm just going to beat the shit out of
you. Well, I just was amused because he barges in and he starts screaming at them, furniture stays in its room. And I was just like, wow.
Yeah. What's he going to say next? It rubs the lotion on the skin or else it gets the hose again?
It was along those lines. It was like,
oh my.
these poor women, all they have is each other.
That's one of the interesting things that this movie does, is it manages to build a world beyond the main plot without actually saying, oh, okay, here's what happened, and here's what the world's like now, and this character's going to explain, hey, I refer to D's as D's because of XYZ. No, they don't ever do that. Yeah. And the same with the quote-unquote furniture here. It's just accepted, and everyone's like, yeah, this is just what people do.
Yeah,
and they respond to it instead of trying to explain everything about it.
Yeah, show, don't tell. And even though this movie I thought was kind of slow, there are so many interesting details that showed how much it sucks. Like the apartment superintendent carries an assault rifle.
Yeah.
I mean, we can talk a little bit about the director. His name is Richard Fleischer. He comes from the Betty Boop fortune. His father is Max Fleischer, the director.
There you go.
So, you know, the old Popeye stuff, the old Superman cartoons, and Betty Boop, that's where his money comes from. He directed Conan the Destroyer and Mandingo and Red Sonja. Yeah, we'll probably come back around to him. But it's so funny to me that knowing that he's an animation...
And the original Dr. Doolittle, let's not forget that.
And the remake of The Jazz Singer. In 1980.
Oh, the one with Neil Diamond? Jesus.
And actually a really good movie, the Disney 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea.
Oh, that was him?
Yeah, which is incredible. But to me, it makes sense that he is an animation guy, comes from that lineage, because this seems like there are certain shots he really cared about, and the rest is just like linkage material, because some shots are very boring. And then there's some incredible sequences, like the one in the church. Like the suicide machine, which we'll get to.
The riot with the anti-riot machines.
Holy cow. Where Karen comes out and goes, hey, everyone, I only got a quarter of what they promised us. And then shit goes down. That's awesome. That's incredible. But like this does slow down at times. But whatever. Rich Van gets killed because Cheryl and... Chuck Hardwagon, what's this guy's name?
The manservant.
His name was Tab Fielding, played by Chuck Connors.
Chuck Connors.
That name Chuck Connors sounds real familiar.
But he looks like... Wait, are you...
Griff Hardapple.
Did you... Never mind. So we're moving on from the fact that you don't know who Chuck Connors is.
Yeah.
Tab, he does look like a tab. That is a that is quite the name. But yeah, he was like hulking and looming and turns out that he was the naughty man all along, or one of the naughty men.
Why is your hand in your pocket right now, Charlie?
No. Hey.
But yeah, so Chuck Connor, is the quote unquote bodyguard of this guy. We don't know much about William Somerset at this point, but he takes her to the market. Mm. And this is where we kind of get this idea of how bad this future is, because like he's getting like a single head of cabbage, one tomato,
and one steak.
I've got something in the back, and it's a steak hanging from a hook behind like a glass panel. It's amazing. It's a good looking cut of meat, but still, it's funny.
Yeah, it's tiny.
They established somewhat later that all the remaining fertile land is like heavily fortified to keep all the city people from overrunning it.
Well, and we will get to the end of this, which is global warming has killed the ocean, which is amazing. But then we see the burglar enter the building and smash.
And he's practically apologizing for beating him to death, and Simonson just lets him.
I'm sorry for what I've done. Which is great.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's basically realized, you know, Soylent Green is people, and he's not happy with himself.
Yeah, and
he was going to blow the whistle, but they killed him, and that's why I said, I understand this is necessary because, you know, the company has to sweep everything under the rug.
Well, and like, and this is kind of what gets us into the plot, because Charlton Heston, I got to be careful here, Thorne is called in because Charlie discovers the corpse.
Correct.
And Charlton Heston Thorne immediately starts looking through the cabinets and pocketing things, which, I mean, you would.
Yeah.
Because...
Well, you know, it's a nice portrayal of cops in 2022 as being utterly corrupt.
Yeah. I mean, and he's like, whiskey, glug. Like,
which, in that situation, everyone would do that.
But I mean, for a second, just Charlton Heston's outfit in this is fantastic. Like, I guess it's supposed to be hot, but he looks like he's going on the African Queen, right? And he's wearing khakis.
With that kerchief.
And a kerchief and, like, the safari jacket and, like, the flat cap on. It's like looks like he's or gonna go fight for the Confederacy. It's like a gray flat cap. But my favorite is...
Dearest Cheryl, I am surrounded by 50,000 homeless people.
Dearest furniture.
Catherine Hepburn, I'm gonna take you on a cruise on this river.
But as he's walking through and he's talking to Beef Hard Chest, Chuck Connors, he walks into the bathroom and there's running water and he goes, oh my. And he goes, go write me a statement. Can you give me a statement? I need to enjoy having a bath. And he just starts washing his hands and you just know this is a horrible future. It's great. It's great. After pocketing half the stuff and talking to Cheryl, he goes back to Edward G. Robinson and like Santa Claus on Christmas morning. Like, he just, it's everything. I will also say, we also get something weird here, which is at the end of the investigation of the scene, he has a buddy who's like a corpse collector that gets a cut of this. We're never explained why.
Oh, that guy that's like an extra in Brazil who's like, I need you to sign so I can take this corpse away.
Yeah, exactly. We don't know why. We don't know exactly what's going on here, but he gets like a commission, but it sounds like a bribe.
Well, I mean, if he had like smuggled more things out with the body, that would make sense.
Right.
Because originally I thought when he said that before the body came out, before, you know, Detective Thorne came out. And it was the body under a sheet. And so I said, oh, he put the stuff in the body. But no, he comes strolling out with a pillowcase over his shoulder, you know, like he gives no fucks. And he just was like, I'm out.
And then the next cut, we get a garbage truck, which is how to get rid of corpses, you find out in this world.
Yeah.
But behind, he gets dumped out on Sesame Street or something. Like, they're in Harlem, there's places everywhere. What's important about this, other than getting calling Cheryl for the last scene, is we kind of get away a view at how bad this world has become. Because as he's unpacking it, the first thing that we are given is paper and pencils.
Yeah.
And
Saul loses his mind because he's like, I haven't seen this in like decades.
Mm-hmm. And new books.
Yeah.
Which become important later. The Soylent Oceanographic Study, two volumes from 2016 to 2019.
At first, we only get the one volume, right?
No, he pulls it away.
He pulls out both.
But that becomes the secret to everything.
Yeah, they talk about the how there's supply chain shortages and publishers are putting out many, if any, books. And if you've worked in book publishing, you know that's happening now.
And then, I mean,
Well, theirs is more because they have no more trees to make paper. More,
let alone electricity, right?
Yeah.
Because I think he even says, we used to have presses and paper and people. And then he pulls out the bourbon to stop the old man. I mean, this is like Boomer talking to Millennial back in May Day.
Here's Booze, shut up. And it works.
Well, I'm happy. And then we have the feast, right? He takes out tomatoes and apples and like, you know, what they do a good job of in the scene is it's not that the food looks bad, but it's very sparse. Like this isn't a horn of plenty. This is like a single apple, single tomato, an onion, like an asparagus, and then the hunk of steak, which brings salt to tears, and you're just like, oh, we're screwed.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, they do this scene again a little bit later when all the furniture's around. When all the girls are there hanging out in the dead guy's apartment, and he's smoking a cigarette, and this is 73, and he goes, I could smoke two or three of these a day.
If I had more money.
And, you know, there's some guy fucking, like, laughing so hard he's losing a lung because he's like, I had two packs today. This is 73, and that's what you do. But this is when we get Saul talking about when I was a boy, yada, yada, yada.
Oh, he does that constantly. He's like Abe Simpson of this movie.
Yes.
And you onion could buy in my belt.
Anywhere.
Had an onion in my belt, which we could have back then because still had onions.
And he is talking about being replaced because he's an old doddering man. And he goes, no, I need you. I don't want you going anywhere. I need you to do research for me because I have to go back out. And the idea is that he's a cop who works at night, presumably because during the day it's awful, and it becomes punishment later on.
I assume this takes place in the same universe as Dredd, where cops can only respond to like 6% of crime on any given day.
That's kind of what it feels like, because when he meets with his chief about this investigation, the chief just says, you gotta let it go. He's like, there's 50 more murders every day that we're not gonna even get to, or whatever it is, something. That's kind of the scene where he's talking about William Simonson, yada, yada. We meet the chief, and Chief Hatcher is, he's kind of sticking it to him.
Do you remember the chief in the McBain movies and The Simpsons? That's this guy.
Yeah, and this is the time period when we had, like, every chief of police was a black guy to... Mm-hmm.
Say that racism doesn't exist anymore, yeah.
Especially in policing, yes.
He's also been in previous episodes that we've done on Star Trek 4 and 6. He's Admiral Cartwright in the Star Trek universe.
Do you think he's still waiting for his reservation at that Chinese restaurant in Seinfeld then?
Maybe. And also, just because I'm plugged by the podcast, required reading, he's also Tom Robinson in To Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh, shit, it's that guy?
Yeah. Incredible actor.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God, I had no idea.
And something they do well in this is, when Charlie Heston enters the room, he's sweating, everyone's sweating because it's global warming, man. Like, Brock Peters is sweating into a t-shirt. Everyone looks awful, which is great.
Which is how it's supposed to be.
Yeah, it's sweat-stained t-shirts, his watch is broken, and Charlton Heston's going to fix it.
That's why I hate so many depictions of dystopian futures in movies, because you can still see when anyone smiles, their teeth are perfectly clean, and everything looks fine. Even if they've got, like, dirt rubbed on their face, it's like, all right, how's that happening?
No, that's because there's no sugar.
This movie at least addresses everything, like why everyone's sweating, like Nick said. They never outright explain, okay, here's what's happened, here's how much fertile landslide because the characters already know. But it's so subtle and so ingenious about how it feeds that information to the audience.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of movies like this would have text up on the screen,
right,
detailing all this information. You know, this collapsed in 2010. This collapsed in 2015.
Yeah, Blade Runner 2049 has that.
Yeah, sure, exactly.
They do. And so did the original
one. It's a staple of a lot of these future dystopian movies.
Right.
But this one shows you. And I think that's part of its genius.
Mm-hmm.
It lets the story unfold on screen.
It also assumes you're intelligent, which a lot of movies today don't really do. Like, turns out one of the other people on the board of Soylent Green is the governor, Santini.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But we're not handheld. You occasionally see a campaign poster around. He's mentioned in a news report. But, like, you know, like, we're guided along. And we'll get to it soon. But as the secret is kind of released, they have interesting ways to hide the truth. A microphone malfunctions. The speakers don't work. A train goes by, so we don't hear what Saul hears, but he clearly reacts, you know, and that's Edward G. Robinson being fantastic, but his face just drops and he goes, "My God, that's horrible."
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the lack of power in his voice is because he feels powerless. After Thorne, we get a market scene because Saul has to get water and he has to get food, and this is just pure hell.
Yeah,
$150 for a box of strawberries.
Oh yeah, we'll get to the jar of strawberries
because
mm-hmm. we're kind of here. This is when
I mention inflation.
2022 inflation.
Yeah. Inflation. So we visit Chuck Hardapple's apartment. The bodyguard's apartment, and we visit with his furniture. And she tries to go, you know, we've been together for years. He goes, yeah, furniture. Her name is Martha, I believe. Her name is Paul Kelly. And he's rifling through all of the stuff, again, looking for stuff to steal, which the chief goes, you take anything? He goes, anything I could lay my hands on. Which is, yeah.
In this society, that's what he's going to do.
Yeah, there's nothing left.
But, I mean, like, but he takes it a step further. I mean, because he does knock her around.
Oh, yeah, this woman he kind of, well, and he's, like, ramshacking the place.
Yeah.
Which he has no reason to. But we are introduced to her wearing kind of, like, a silk gi and eating strawberry jam with a spoon out of a jar. He's, like, kind of looking through stuff. He goes into the bedroom and he sees the incinerator. Which, I mean, he already assumes the bodyguard's kind of in on it, but this is kind of like, oh, what do you do with an incinerator other than destroy evidence? And she goes, well, it's not working. And he goes, sure, whatever.
Sure, Pally.
Well, and then we get to the furniture thing, because he's leaving, and he goes, I'm sorry to bust in on you. And she goes, you know, I should have offered you something. And he goes, if I had time, I would have offered. Right.
No. If I had time, I would have taken it.
I would have taken it. Right. There you go. And then she notices he took her spoon, which is really something.
The spoon covered with jam?
The jam spoon, if you will.
Spoon!
Which he then gives to Edward G. Robinson after they're having a salad with some bourbon. This is like the big meal scene.
Yeah.
He gives him the spoon.
It's the feast scene, but it's like such a tiny meal for both of them, because that's all they have.
It's such a mega feast, spirit. I pay him so little. But yeah, this is what it is. And he has, you know, he has a salad, and he's made a stew. He takes out the nice china.
Mm-hmm.
At first, I was kind of bummed that he made the stew, but then I was thinking, I'm like, there's 500 people in the hallway. If they just cooked up a steak, they'd be like zombies at the bar. It'd become Omega Man.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You cook it like a stew, because there's no refrigeration either, so you're just eating it. But yeah, it's just a perfect, like, Edward G. Robinson's, like, trying to convince him, like, salad's good, and he's not sure about salad, but then you have, like, this stew. And if there was one man in history who understood stew, it's Charlton Heston.
Oh, yeah.
John Wayne's up there, too, with just stew. But, you know, they're eating this, and he's trying to eat it with a fork because he's never had a fork before, I guess. I don't know.
When you're eating wafers, you don't need utensils.
I mean, we'll get there, but the Soylent Green is just Triscuits that have been dyed green, and it's really fun.
Yeah. No, the actual Soylent Green, it's not visually appealing, the conveyor belt with all that on it.
But, I mean, the scene, I mean, Charlie talked about the relationship, but this is where it really gets cute, because Saul is like an old school guy, and like, so Charlton Heston has never had a real apple before by his recollection, and so when Saul like polishes it on his shirt, Charlton Heston's like, well, I guess that's what you do with apples, so he rubs it on his shirt, and then he has bad teeth now, so Saul's cutting up his apple, and it's just...
I assume everybody in this universe has scurvy.
I mean, probably not, because I just imagine those wafers are everything in a tablet form. Yeah.
Would it have killed the filmmakers to shape Soylent Green like animal crackers or something?
Well, one looks like a loaf of bread.
I was going to say, Soylent Red, we have Soylent Red buns and Soylent Yellow like pasta or something. Because in that scene where there's a riot, they're like hot dog buns.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Now, but Soylent Green is the good one, the one with actual protein. And they're being told, we hear over the speakers, that it's a mixture of soy and lentils.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Plankton.
And then we find out the green is supposed to actually be plankton.
Yeah.
So the Soylent has moved on to plankton. That's why the oceanographic studies become important later. But, like, after dinner, he washes his hands because he stole the soap. He's just like, this is the worst world.
And he smells his hands.
Have you ever smelled hands this clean? So, but yeah, so.
Sniff my hand.
That's right. So we finally get information here on Simonson. Simonson graduated from, I think, Yale. He was born in the 50s. And he sits on the board of Soylent.
It's Mr. Takagi's record in the first Die Hard movie is Simonson's record.
Pretty much completely. He is now, I mean, and so now they break back up as they try to figure out a little bit more going into it.
Yeah?
No, I'm just, from here we, like, the next scene we kind of get is, there's two side by side, which is, he goes to visit Cheryl again, and this is when Charlie shows up, I mean, he sleeps with Cheryl here, this is the closest...
Who is the other woman?
Like,
in this
he walks
movie?
In and he just says to her, "Get in the bed."
Yeah, go to the bedroom. We'll get there. And this is also when the guy who looks like Muammar Gaddafi is telling the chief of police to stop investigating.
So, yeah,
these two things are kind of cross-cut.
Who's the one woman, the black woman that Charlton Heston went to interrogate? Who was another piece of furniture? I think?
Martha, I think
that was Martha.
Okay, that was Martha. Yeah. Okay.
And I also will say, like, this scene with the women around is right out of the 60s and 70s.
Oh, I total Valley of the Dolls vibe right there.
Right,
groovy vibe.
And you knew there was like a silver platter over to the side. With plenty of blow for everyone on that set.
Charlie, would you say that it's your happening and did it freak you out?
But like everyone's wearing sleeveless dresses, their hair and they're just sitting around, right?
Yeah, they're lounging. They're wearing those dresses that are like more like sheer than anything else. I mean, and they're just casually touching each other. It's like there's window dressing.
It's like there's a vibe going on, right?
There's a vibe.
Well, and something the movie does very interestingly is it's very minimal score. There's a lot of silence in this movie, but this is a place where there's life. So there's music playing in this scene. And again, so there's just a girl in the corner drinking a bourbon. There's other women drinking coffees. And then he's like, furniture to the bedroom. And he's talking. I mean, it's funny because for a second there, you're like, "Oh, he's just interrogating." Nope. He's gonna sleep with her. And then Heston takes the bourbon from one of them and just starts pounding it. And this is like a glass, which is whatever. But it's funny because he's never had it before.
But he's never had the ice, and so he's freaking out.
Yeah.
And there's air conditioning, which becomes important to them later, which is great. But essentially, Charlie shows up. And he starts beating the women around. Charlton Heston, Thorne, kicks
you
him out.
Tell me what I want to know, or I'm kicking your ass.
Yeah, he does a lot of teeth talking here. But we also get here the kind of setup for the next bit, which is for the last couple of weeks, he was acting strange, and he was taking me to church. And that we'll get to the church in a second because it's a horrible scene. I mean, it's well directed, but it's really, again, the dystopia.
Oh, when they're at the homeless shelter and he tries to talk to the priest that Simonson confessed to.
And the man is...
The man is just a shell of a human being.
Well, and it's like he's stoned or something. Like, he's staring off into the distance the whole time, and, like, he's sweating. It's not a homeless shelter. It's literally a church that is filled with people.
Who are homeless.
Who are homeless. But
don't they know there's a perfectly good stairwell to go sleep in?
Yeah, that's right. But Cheryl doesn't want him to leave, very importantly. He goes, turn the air conditioning all the way up. I'm taking a shower. And she goes, you can let the water run as long as you'd like. And it's so depressing. But yeah, and then we smash cut to the church. And the church is awful. Yeah. And by the way, before we get to the church, he finds a corpse in the hallway tied to a child.
Yes.
And he brings the child to the church. Because it's an orphanage, kind of. And he's
literally, but he just sort of leaves the woman who's dead on the steps.
He's like, yeah.
Well, what else are you going to do with her? I mean, I thought that was part of the
call the garbage man.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't pause to, like, call, you know, for assistance. It's more of them showing what this world is about.
Yeah.
Oh, you see a dead body? Oh, just walk over it.
Yeah.
I will say, too,
it's the Frank Reynolds It's Always Sunny logic. When I'm dead, just throw me in the trash.
Kind of, yeah. But I will say, too, this is where we get more social commentary. He goes, rich men. We don't see any rich people here. Only the poor go to church, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
And he clearly remembers seeing Simonson, and he's trying to avoid it. There's a confession. He admits that there's confession. And whatever he said in confession has broken this priest.
And it's, you know, that Soylent Green is people.
Which we'll be back here. Don't worry, Charlie's going to get his comeuppance here. Charlton Heston's going to get his comeuppance here, too. The priest is also, I mean, other than acting, I don't know if he's supposed to be stoned or not, but he's got this thousand-yard stare.
Having to care for that many poor in this dystopia, and then he finds out that he and everyone else have been eating people, is probably just totally destroyed his mind.
Well, I mean, I don't know, and I don't know if it... He can't even turn to a bottle. The alcohol is rare, so he's dead. Anyway, this guy's name is Lincoln Kilpatrick. He was also in Charlton Heston in Omega Man, and actually a really silly, fun movie with Christopher Lambert called Fortress.
Hmm.
I don't know if you've seen Fortress, but it's a Stuart Gordon picture.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. And so we'll kind of get back to him in a second. Anyway. At this point, the chief tells him to get off the case, and if you don't get off the case and stop investigating it, you're on riot duty. And so now we have the riot duty scene, which is also, I think,
And the dude who killed Simonson is after him now.
Oh, yeah, during the riot scene? Yeah. Yeah. Well, first, why do they riot? They riot because...
There's not enough food.
Exactly. What I found fascinating is that even in the dystopian future... She comes out and she says, I only got a quarter of a kilo.
Yes.
Which tells me that maybe it's not all that bad because the U.S. has switched to metric.
Well, maybe that's what caused the shortages in the first place. Did you ever think of that?
Yes.
That's right.
Metric system is of the devil.
Take the imperial system from my cold, dead hands.
This is when we were trying. This was Nixon trying, right? Hmm.
There you go. So, the only thing that was missing was for them to actually have Esperanto like sprinkled throughout this movie.
That
would be like yet another 1970s trend.
Well, and I mean, like, and that would have been a little bit more texture. Sometimes this movie feels very, very slow and textureless, like I was saying earlier. That would have been something, like if they read everything in English and then Esperanto. meanwhile, his riot gear is his police outfit, but with like a jaunty football helmet.
Yes.
Yeah, basically.
Which is
not really much.
Yeah, it's a football helmet. It's like, they don't even try and hide it. It's a literal football helmet.
And then the dude who murdered Simonson now is following him. And he saw like the tail before, but now it's more constant. The cops are telling them to disperse, and across every scene, he's just pairing at Charlton Heston.
Don the Luck.
And as they flip over tables and start shoving the cops, they call in bulldozers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess they're technically, like, they look more like snowplows or something, right?
Well, actually, that's what Josh said they were, because, you know, he lived in New York City. He's like, that's what the snowplows look like.
Right.
And so they repurposed the snowplows for this.
And
because it doesn't snow anymore in
the future.
Yeah. Right.
I will say, like, this is cool because it's all practical, but, like, they're just dudes getting lifted up in this snow shovel thing, mm-hmm. and they're jumping off, they're diving into the back. This is, it's a brutal scene. Like, this is
absolutely.
And you just hear screaming, and then you see the blade hitting the street over over again.
I mean, the way it just comes slamming down.
It's like in The Wolfman, when he finally kills the Wolfman, you just see the cane going up and down, mm-hmm. up and down.
But it was a very dark and compelling, like, scene. Well, and that alone, just wow.
Well, it was about overpopulation just rendering humans worthless, because it's like, oh, yeah. All right, well, I killed someone, there's 40 million others just like him, and then it's way too much, let's go. I don't care.
Although I will say, that's another not weird problem I have, but just confusing thing. Like, 40 million people would be dying all the time. There should be too much Soylent Green. Not sure, like, maybe it's only very special people who die in the suicide booths, but, like...
That hemlock gives a particular flavor.
Ah.
I think it's just downers. Those people are just given, like, fentanyl or something. It is
another drinking. 2022 issue.
There you go. But, like, this scene is brutal, but as you were saying, it's like they're treating them like they're livestock or something.
Right.
Right? Like, this is where it gets good. Then Heston takes off his helmet, and he has a fist fight with the guy who's trying to shoot him. But this is also where we get some weird violence, because he shoots that woman in the head, and she goes, she's gone. Then Heston gets shot in the leg, and then he is crushed by the fucking snowplow. There's all of a sudden violence in this movie, which I didn't expect, which I'm here for. The guy directed Conan the Destroyer, for God's sake. Let him do a little violence. But now things are starting to unwind. We're starting to get to the bottom of this. We have the library scene with those old British people. What's it's where his book goes.
Right. Now, the reason I asked about both volumes is I thought that was the big twist that made Saul want to kill himself, is they had one volume and he was searching for the other, and when he got it and found out the truth, he couldn't take it anymore.
What I think it is that he goes to this room, and it's like the Supreme Exchange or something. There's these old people in this, like, these library stacks that are hidden. It's a bolted door. It's the rest of the world's knowledge, right?
Well, it's the other books.
It's all the other books, right?
Yeah.
And he goes, look, I have these two oceanographic studies. We think it's important for the case. I have to research the other 12 cases that he's also researching. Right. Because remember, I think he says at one point his jurisdiction ends at Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Like, so this is like mega city New York. And so Saul gives this woman these two volumes, and then he has to go back to them later after she's read through them to try to figure out what the issue is. Right. And Heston at this point is recuperating after being shot with Cheryl.
And they have sex.
Again. But we get sent to the curfew.
And they have a shower that looks like it's made out of plastic bricks.
It's something out of Cronenberg. It's incredible.
Oh, yeah.
You're one hell of a piece of furniture. Because I think the line. Yeah, but what they discover is Simonson was a board member, and Soylent Green can't come from the oceans because the oceans are dying. It's too hot for the plankton to grow. And the corporation no longer trusts him because he found out the truth. And this truth broke him, leading to him wanting to die. And it has broken the priest, and that's why he had to be eliminated.
Yeah, speaking of eliminated, someone shoots the priest too.
Well, yes. That's I think, the next scene.
It's the same guy, I think, that was killed Simonson, isn't it?
No. The guy who killed Simonson is that street tough that gets crushed by the snowplow.
Yes.
The guy who shoots the priest is the bodyguard.
That's right.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. We meet the new apartment owner around here too, somewhere, and Cheryl's encouraged to stay. It's strange.
He's kind of creepy. He's like, sometimes I have friends over and we have fun. Do you like to have fun, Cheryl?
Are you fun?
Simonson was just a nice, lonely, nice old man who just gave her a video arcade. That dude is a reprobate.
She was still a sex slave to him, though.
Well,
things just got worse then.
We'll get to the end, but that's why it's so sad at the end, right? Mm-hmm. Because she's playing nice, but at this point, Saul has left a letter for Charlton Heston, and it says, "I'm going home."
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Well, I mean, and Charlton Heston knows immediately what that means. But what's neat is how they structure this scene. We have a lot of people with walkers. We have a lot of elderly and infirm, and they're walking in. And Saul has been home this whole time and doing his research. When the air conditioning hits his face, he's kind of brought back, and he just, and all these things of the world he once knew, right? Mm-hmm. It's really sad.
Oh yeah, because there's that big Clockwork Orange slideshow that he watches before they actually kill him.
This is the deluxe package.
Yeah.
First, you get picked up by Dick Van Patten. the president of Planet Space, or the king of Planet Spaceball. And then he gets escorted to this room, and they're playing The Rite of Spring, and he's seeing the world as he remembers it, right? Like,
well, it's all you have to remember. There's the man and the woman who, like, undress him and put him into the bed, and they attend to his every need.
Yeah, and he's given a tumbler of wine,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, and Dick Van Patten, you know, and Charlton Heston shows up, Thorne shows up, and Dick Van Patten's like, no, you can't go in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's watching nature scenes, the world that he remembers, is all these beautiful gardens and stuff.
And this scene is the best scene in the movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, because Thorne wants to talk to him and whatever, they express their love for each other, but he goes, is this what you remember? And he goes, it's beautiful. And he goes, I couldn't imagine.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this really sucks the life out of him. Like, it's truly sad. But as the Rite of Spring is playing, which becomes important, it's Rite of Spring, it's rebirth, he pans across, right? And they're talking over this kind of communicator,
mm-hmm.
but it starts to short out. So he gets his headset. So once again, mm-hmm. we don't hear what the secret is. It's well hidden. But again, like, they love each other, and he's dying in front of flowers, damn it. It's so well done. But when he says his final secret to Charlton Heston, and Heston, he breaks too.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Well, says it, and then it's like, you've got to prove
it. You've got to get the proof.
You need the proof.
And take it to the exchange.
That's right. But, like, there's almost no more sound for the rest of the movie. Like, it's actually very quiet rest of the movie until the fight at the end.
There's no dialogue, really, you're right.
Which, I mean, and it goes on a skosh too long, but, like, it's America, so I'm sure someone had to pay for this suicide, but, like, it's just such a cool
idea. I suspect Soylent paid for that suicide for reasons that will soon become clear.
Yeah. But just imagine, like, he filmed the scene 10 days before he died. For real.
Yeah.
Like, that's amazing. Mm-hmm.
That is also very sad.
It is sad.
He had, liver cancer, I think, didn't he?
He had really aggressive cancer of some sort. I think it was liver cancer. But, like, to go out on this scene, that's, there are worse things to do. It's a hell of a scene. But, yeah.
Well, anyway, Charlie goes, he follows a garbage truck that's full of, like, corpses into the exchange.
Presumably, he's following literally Edward G. Robinson's body.
Yeah, like, yeah.
I will say, though, That's the only part. That's another thing that I'm like, it's a weird choice to know what happens to corpses and then mm-hmm. still do this. But yeah, so, you know, Charlton Heston, in an effort to, I guess, avenge his friend in some ways, follows this body, and we get, like, these incredible industrial scenes where he's in the back of the garbage truck. He's mm-hmm. running through the factory.
Where there's nobody working.
Very few people.
Until the very end when two technicians decide they're going to take him on to... For the honor of their employer.
That's how they keep the secret. They have as few people as possible.
Well, and again, prescient to 2020, with, you know, no one has jobs because everything's being replaced with automation. Mm. I mean, it's a very Luddite kind of thing.
Yeah.
And we'll get to the overt socialist message at the end with the bloody red fist of the worker being raised in the air as the last shot of the movie. But I mean, Matt's right. You know, it's the automated McDonald's that are coming out. Right? There's no jobs because there's no people.
In the future, the ice cream machine is still broken.
Always. Always.
After all this time, Ronald McDonald, always.
Mm. My God, it's still broken.
Damn you. You didn't fix the ice cream machine. Damn you all to hell.
There you go. But yeah. So he gets the evidence. He sees the scene. He wants to get the information to the exchange, but we follow these people who are dressed like ninjas and guns, and he walks them through the factory, and then we see literally the body bags going into this goo vat, and on the other side comes crackers.
Yeah.
Is it green goo?
It's green goo and green crackers. There was a 50-50 shot whether he'd be turned into a Joker or turned into a cracker, and these chose the cracker bat.
He beats up a security guard and, like, knocks him out onto the conveyor belt with the crackers on them.
Yeah.
And it implies that somehow that guy's going to die as part of this process.
And then it turned into the food for which he worked so hard for. I assume that's what happens when you die to Papa John's. They just turn you into the pepperoni.
Yeah, probably.
I always want the Jones is people.
Anyway, at this point, he calls back Cheryl and says, you know, do you have a new tenant, whatever? And he goes, don't quit that job.
Mm-hmm.
You need to keep that job because on the street, like, death is worse, trust me. And then he calls his lieutenant. He goes, they're after me. I still have a tail. I have to get to the exchange. And at this point, there's a shootout.
In which Hessen is wounded.
After he kills pretty much all the Soylent thugs, and him running out of ammunition actually is a major plot point.
Right. I mean, this ends back at the church, where he gets into like a fist fight with again the bodyguard, who is, you know, he has got a gun. They're fighting. He's bleeding. He finds like a rusty knife and stabs this guy in the guts.
Yep.
And as he's being taken away by the medics,
that's where we get the meme from this movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's people. It's made from people. Soylent Green is people.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, he takes his hand away. It's bloody. And he holds it up into a fist, ending with our messaging.
This movie was allowed in Cuba.
That's right. Was it? Really?
I don't know.
I mean, I believe you.
It wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, America's a horrific place, the movie.
But it ends on such a jarring note. Like, just ends there and immediately goes to this field of flowers that's beautiful and bright with, like, this uplifting music. And you're just like, what? Wait a second.
Yeah, I mean,
I need to process this doom and despair.
I mean, well, presumably, I thought that meant that they forcefully took Hessen to die in the ceremony.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And I think that's what it's supposed to imply, and it does a great job. It's just, it's jarring.
Oh, I thought it was like an unsubtle eco message. Like, look at this urban overpopulated hell. Oh, look at this world you have now.
Yes.
I think it's a lot of things, to be honest.
I think it's also that, hey, audience, you should be doing something about it. Instead, you're just sitting here watching pretty pictures.
Damn you, get up out of your seats and go save the environment. Save the world.
I will say, too, something just about the fight scene right at the end here. Other than Hessen is getting his ass kicked, which he is. You know, like, in a good fight scene, you know you're in an alley and there's, like, barrels you're throwing at each other, people are slamming into wall. There's just like people here. There's so many times where they're just stumbling over people.
Yeah, it's like, and nobody seems to care. There's two dudes killing each other in a church, tripping over people. People are still asleep.
Yeah.
The one thing I did find a little bit weird is that every time they showed anything on the street, except for the riot scene, it was empty and deserted. Yeah. And it doesn't seem like that would be right for a 40 million, you know, overcrowded New York City.
Yeah, I mean,
Especially at night. Night seems like when people would want to go out and live their lives.
If they're going to do it, they need a bunch more cops. Like, that screams like there's some sort of, you know, curfew or something.
Yeah,
but yeah, there is a curfew.
Well, there is, but it's unclear if that's the reason why it's so empty.
Right. But, I mean, like, and if it is, and that's why it's so empty, there should be cops everywhere.
Yeah,
they should be crawling with police. Because how else are you going to keep 40 million people in line unless one out of every 100 people is a cop?
Yeah.
Plus so many people homeless, what's the point of having a curfew? Like, well, I can't go anywhere else. Well,
don't move from your spot on the fire escape. Yeah, I mean, I guess I also think part of it is... they're trying, this is when they get rid of the bodies and turn them into Soylent, so they don't want as many witnesses to the bodies. Because all the scenes where we see corpses being tossed into trucks is at night too. Again, at the end, Hatcher's there, the guy who's been covering it up the whole time because he's been feeling pressure from the governor. And he goes, look, man, it's people. I don't know what to tell you. It's Soylent Green, it's people. And Heston here is about to, you know, get played off with the Rite of Spring.
Yep.
I think we're about at the end. Any final thoughts, gentlemen? Matt?
Yeah, I mean, it's not the most exciting movie in the world, but it's from a storytelling perspective, it's well done. And that wonderful phrase, show, don't tell. It's very timely in many ways. I liked it.
Okay. I was surprised how much I liked this movie. I thought it was very creative in how it built up this dystopian world where... supplies and food just don't exist anymore. It could have been a lot cheesier, and I thought it would be a lot cheesier because I was just used to the memification of this movie, but it's actually worth checking out.
Yeah.
You know, it's great. I loved it. It's the use of sound or the lack of sound in many scenes, the acting, everything. It's a great movie. It's one of the classics for a reason.
Yeah, I mean, and there were some, you know, talky talks we had before we were on script here that I think flesh it out a little bit more. The parts where this movie feels less prescient, it feels very 70s of its time.
Yeah.
I mean, because this is the era right after Silent Spring with Rachel Carson, right after Population Bomb came out, which is, I mean, like I said, the ERA was in Congress at this time and about to pass, and there's this kind of 70s cynicism that's all throughout this movie, but... I'll give it to... generally, when I think of Heston, I think of his, you know, big, broad performances, like Ten Commandments or Ben-Hur. He's more subtle in a lot of this, but when he gets angry Heston, he's good. Edward G. Robinson is incredible. Like, across the board, there's good acting, and occasionally Fleischer has some really interesting shots. There's a reason I think people talk about this movie but don't watch it, but I'd say find it if you can. It's... not too hard to find. I think I got it for $3.
Yeah, same here.
But, you know, it's one of those weird 70s classics that luckily kept around because people know the phrase.
Yep.
But since it's not owned by Disney, there's not really a platform to dump it on. So I don't think many people have seen this anymore.
I thought it was on HBO Max at one point.
It was, but that's because they licensed it. As right. opposed to, like, previous episode, Black Hole, which is just forever on Disney Plus, which... otherwise, it would have been completely forgotten to space and time. So this movie, find it. Why not? All right, so if you're listening to it now, at the moment, next week is scheduled Adam's Family Values because Tim Burton's Wednesday series is supposed to be dropping on Netflix. Now, if for whatever reason it doesn't come out, we might push it back, but one way or another, Adam's Family Values is coming down the pipeline. And I have nothing against the current cast, but it's always good to see Raul Julia on screen.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for subscribing. Thanks for supporting us, however you do so. Thanks for sharing us. And for the 12,000 of you who, for some reason, listened to 10 Things I Hate About You in the month of, or the first week of August, thanks, guys.
Season 9 of Myopia Movies is produced by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Suttis. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman and stars Daniel Suttis and Matt Quinn. The theme music is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod of Incomtech.com and is licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and review us wherever podcasts are found. Thanks, guys.